Welcome back to the News at Noon. The Richland Hospital and Clinics is proud to announce the addition of Dr. Austin Ewart to its orthopedic surgery department. Bringing a wealth of expertise and a passion for rural medicine, Dr. Ewart is set to enhance the specialized care available to the local community. He recently completed his intensive orthopedic surgery residency at Michigan State University McLaren Oakland in Pontiac, Michigan, where he gained significant experience in general orthopedics and high-volume surgical procedures. Dr. Ewart was drawn to the region by the opportunity to practice broad-based orthopedics while fostering deep, multi-generational relationships with his patients. He expressed great enthusiasm for the welcoming culture of the hospital and the scenic beauty of the surrounding area, noting that providing a full spectrum of care in a rural setting was a primary goal for his career. His arrival is seen as a major step forward for the facility, as he will work alongside established surgeons to expand access to essential services like sports medicine and joint replacements. Community members can look forward to meeting Dr. Ewart soon, as he is scheduled to begin seeing patients in mid-September. The hospital has already opened scheduling for his initial clinics, allowing residents to secure appointments in advance. With his commitment to patient-centered, high-quality care, Dr. Ewart is poised to become an integral part of the healthcare team and the community at large. The city of Viroqua is set to receive a significant boost to its local infrastructure following the announcement of a $2.518 million loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Rural Development. Wisconsin State Director Andrew C. Iverson confirmed the funding today, which is designated for the installation of critical solid waste infrastructure at the city's closed landfill to address environmental and safety concerns. The primary focus of this investment is the installation of an active landfill gas extraction system. This new technology is designed to capture and control subsurface gases more effectively than the city's current passive system, which is no longer operational. Recent monitoring has shown that gas migration is occurring, making this upgrade a vital step in maintaining regulatory compliance and ensuring the safety of the surrounding area. The project will include the construction of gas extraction wells, transmission piping, and a blower system to draw out and safely eliminate the gas through flare skid units. Director Iverson emphasized that this funding aligns with broader federal efforts to support rural communities by maintaining affordable utility rates and providing essential sanitary services. The investment is being facilitated through the Water and Waste Disposal Loan and Grant Program, an initiative that helps rural areas improve the treatment facilities serving local households and businesses. This modernization effort reflects the ongoing commitment of the USDA to provide the safe and reliable infrastructure that Wisconsin residents deserve. The Wisconsin Department of Justice Division of Criminal Investigation has launched an investigation into the death of 38-year-old Corey D. Ruiz following an encounter with Madison Police Department officers Wednesday, July 22nd. The incident occurred in the city's Marquette neighborhood after police received reports of a subject checking parked vehicles and an alleged burglary attempt around 1 p.m. When officers attempted to contact the subject, he reportedly fled the scene on a bicycle. At approximately 1:35 p.m., four officers located Ruiz at the intersection of South Baldwin and Williamson Streets. According to official reports, a physical altercation ensued during the contact. Investigators state that Ruiz brandished a knife and injured Officer Keel Badinger Peterson, a veteran with over 10 years of law enforcement service. While two other officers attempted to deploy tasers without success, Officer Badinger Peterson discharged his firearm, striking Ruiz. A knife was later recovered at the scene. Emergency medical services were summoned and life-saving measures were performed before Ruiz was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced deceased. In addition to Officer Badinger Peterson, a second officer sustained injuries during the struggle. Both officers were treated and released from a local hospital. No members of the public were harmed during the incident. Per agency policy, all four responding officers have been placed on administrative leave. DCI FBI is currently leading the investigation with assistance from the Dane County Sheriff's Office, Wisconsin State Patrol, and the Sun Prairie Police Department. Involved law enforcement personnel are reportedly cooperating fully with the inquiry. Once the review of evidence and facts is complete, DCI will submit its investigative reports to the Dane County District Attorney's Office for review. All of that information was provided in a press release today from the Department of Justice. In a decisive move to address the state's growing medical needs, Universities of Wisconsin President Renee Wachter and a coalition of university representatives have unveiled the Healthy Wisconsin Proposal. This ambitious budget initiative aims to train 35,000 new healthcare professionals over the next 10 years, serving as the cornerstone of the university's 2026-27 budget request. By focusing on the healthcare pipeline, the proposal seeks to ensure that Wisconsin communities remain vibrant and well-supported by a robust workforce of skilled medical experts. President Wachter, speaking at UW-La Crosse alongside Chancellor James Beebe, UW Parkside Provost Matt Cecil, and UW Stout Polytechnic Dean of Students Sandy Scott, emphasized that the Universities of Wisconsin have a longstanding commitment to solving the state's most pressing challenges. The proposal requests a $90 million state investment distributed across all 13 public universities. This collective effort is designed to improve access to care by reducing wait times for appointments and ensuring that every region of the state has the professional talent necessary to thrive. The urgency of the proposal is underscored by the current shortage of healthcare workers, which threatens the ability of residents to receive timely medical attention. Wachter noted that when professionals are in short supply, it becomes increasingly difficult for individuals to lead healthy lives and for local economies to prosper. By involving every university in the system, Healthy Wisconsin aims to strengthen the professional pipeline from education to practice, ultimately fulfilling a promise to enhance the quality of life for all Wisconsin citizens. The Richland School District will be holding super registration tomorrow from 1 p.m. until 7 p.m. at the Richland Center High School. During the event, there will be staff members on hand to assist parents and their children who will attend Richland School District this year. There will also be representatives of various groups and organizations in attendance. Dr. Sherry Johnson is Director of Curriculum and Instruction at the Richland School District.
We've expanded all of the groups that are there. So we have tables for, like, Cobison will be there. So if families want to check in and let them know my student's riding the bus, and then Cobison will let them know what bus, you know, depending on where they live. A food service will be there if there's questions about that. We will also have a lot of clubs and community organizations like Head Start, also CCOP will be there, and different groups like that. It'll be a really great place for families to get resources. We will have our booster club there, as well as our athletics will be there, because to do athletics, you have to have either an alternate year card or get a physical in order to participate. And so that card will be there and available if you haven't done that yet. Our nurses will be there if there's something that you're concerned about with your child, and you can talk with them. All of our principals and their office staff will be there if you have other things you want to talk about.
Photos will be taken during super registration.
We have school photos, so make sure that everyone's looking great and you can come in and get your school photos done. However, if you do have to miss that date, we do have a makeup photo day on September 15th. The students can get their photos taken in their buildings on that day.
The event will also feature school tours, a food truck, and more. Super registration is not only a good opportunity to prepare for school, but also will give students a chance to meet who they might associate with during the new school year.
I feel like super registration is a great opportunity to connect with maybe classmates or staff. When school starts September 1st, this gives you a few weeks before school starts to kind of get in that mentality again and understand what's coming.
Students who will be new to the district are especially encouraged to attend so you can get enrolled. Get ready for the school year by attending super registration anytime between 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. tomorrow at Richland Center High School. You can find out more information on the Richland School District website or by calling the district office at 608-647-6106. Senator Howard Markline has been officially named the 2026 Legislator of the Year by the Wisconsin State Fire Chiefs Association. The prestigious award was presented Friday at the Platteville Fire Station by a delegation including WSFCA President Chief Steve Denzian, Vice President Robert Goplin, and Platteville Fire Chief Ryan Simmons. The recognition highlights Senator Markline's extensive efforts to support fire departments across the state. During the 2025 through 2027 legislative session, Markline championed significant legislation, including 2025 Wisconsin Acts 35, 36, and 212, which aimed to expand training options and increase funding and flexibility for local departments. He also authored 2025 Wisconsin Act 197 to enhance protections for fire department personnel against job-related threats. Furthermore, Markline was a key leader in securing long-term state budget funding for specialized units such as Wisconsin Task Force 1 and Regional Hazardous Materials Response Teams. Expressing his gratitude, Senator Markline noted that local fire departments are the first to answer the call during emergencies, and he remains committed to being a reliable voice for them in the legislature. Chief Denzian praised Markline as a strong advocate who has provided instrumental tools and sustainable funding to ensure the safety and effectiveness of Wisconsin's emergency responders. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin has joined a coalition of lawmakers in a firm stand against a recent proposal by the Environmental Protection Agency to rescind critical drinking water protections. The opposition centers on the EPA's plan to eliminate federal public health limits on specific PFAS chemicals, often referred to as forever chemicals. Baldwin and her colleagues argue that such a move would expose millions of Americans to unsafe levels of toxins, which are scientifically linked to severe health outcomes, including kidney and testicular cancer, thyroid disease, and developmental harm in children. The group of senators emphasizes that the rollback directly contradicts the Safe Drinking Water Act, specifically its anti-backsliding provisions intended to ensure public health protections remain robust once established by scientific evidence. By delaying compliance for PFOA and PFOS standards until 2031 and removing limits for other variants, the administration's proposal is seen as a major step backward. Lawmakers highlighted that these standards were the result of decades of research and advocacy, and that weakening them now would penalize communities that have already invested resources into remediation and compliance planning. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, in his capacity as chairman of the Committee on the Budget, has officially introduced the fiscal year 2027 budget resolution. Chairman Johnson said, "When we have the finest among us, the men and women in our armed services, in harm's way, it is beyond unfortunate that providing support for their efforts and protection has turned into a partisan issue. The same can be said for supporting farmers, our intelligence services, and election integrity. In less partisan times, the requested appropriation supplemental for these priorities would have sailed through Congress with bipartisan support. Instead, because of Democrat obstructionism, we are having to resort to the budget reconciliation process. This resolution would fund the bare minimum of what is required for the defense of our nation, and I urge my colleagues to fully support it." The resolution outlines recommended federal revenue levels starting at approximately $4.48 trillion for 2027, scaling up to over $6.34 trillion by 2036. It also sets outlays for national defense, international affairs, and science, aiming to maintain a structured fiscal path while addressing immediate security requirements. Gas Buddy reports average gasoline prices in Wisconsin have experienced a recent decline, falling 10.9 cents per gallon over the past week to reach an average of $3.84 today, according to Gas Buddy's survey of 3,112 state stations. Despite this short-term dip, prices remained elevated compared to historical figures, sitting 14.9 cents higher than 1 month ago and 97.7 cents higher than this time last year. Diesel fuel has also seen a modest decrease of 5.1 cents, with the national average now at $5.28 per gallon. The cost of filling up varies significantly across Wisconsin. Recent reports indicate a wide spread in pricing, with the cheapest station offering gas at $3.53 per gallon, compared to a high of $4.99 per gallon. On a national level, the trend aligns with local findings. The average price of gasoline across the country has dropped by 10.7 cents per gallon in the last week, settling in at $3.94 today. While this represents a weekly decrease, the national average remains higher than a month ago by 9.5 cents, and significantly higher than a year ago by 85.6 cents. The 26th annual Ride to Remember Motorcycle Ride and Rally, hosted by the High Ground, is scheduled for Saturday, August 15th. This long-standing tradition invites motorcycle riders, veterans, families, and community supporters for a day filled with camaraderie, scenic rides, live music, and raffles. Participants can choose from three different rides, starting with a one-hour ride at 10 a.m., a two-hour ride at noon, and a one-hour sanctioned ride led by the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association at 1 p.m. Registration is available for $25 for solo riders or $45 for a rider and passenger, which covers the rides, lunch, and a commemorative item. While on-site registration is an option, early registration is encouraged. Beyond the riding, the event features live music by the Hillbilly Fever Band and various raffles, including the popular Basket Babes Baskets. A poignant highlight occurs at 2:45 p.m. with a symbolic ride through Neillsville, representing the departure and return of service members. Following this, a 3:15 remembrance ceremony will feature guest speaker Ty Leto, a retired chief warrant officer for. The ceremony honors those who served and includes the reading of 100 names of fallen service members. The High Ground, located at W7031 Ridge Road in Neillsville, looks forward to honoring our nation's heroes from the community. Democratic congressional candidate Emily Berge appeared on WRCO's morning show recently. Our own Phil Nee asked her what set her apart from her opponent in the upcoming primary.
I think, you know, there's some policy differences. Like, I am the only candidate that is, you know, supports a moratorium on data centers. You know, I think that we need to get that figured out until, and it's not even a timeline for me, it's until we have regulations on data centers, but also AI. You know, again, I brought up AI. When I talk to young folks, they're top, you hit the top two, healthcare, housing, but AI, you know, and like, people want regulations around this. You know, we need to have oversight with this AI, these AI products. I'll just tell a quick story. Like, my daughter, who's 18, she's going to go to school to be an illustrator. She's a very creative person, very proud of her. And they both actually go to, my kids go to Stout, so that's great. And my husband and I met at Stout, so that's kind of fun. But anyway, she got herself a tablet for school, for college, and she deliberately got an older model that didn't have AI, like, baked in it. And that's how people are that age, you know, 18 through 20s, like, they're sick of AI. And so I think it's really important to put a moratorium on all these huge data centers that are coming, which these transmission lines are feeding. Like, it's all part of the same thing, right? It's these billionaires in California that are just, like, using us, you know, like, using our land, using our, you know, they want us to pay for it. No, like, we need to put a stop to it until we can get that figured out. So that's a big difference as well, you know, just that moratorium on data centers.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know what it is like living from paycheck to paycheck out here and, you know, all across the country, right?
Yes, right. I know. It's true. Yeah. Yeah. Paycheck, you know, it's really scary. And then healthcare as well, you know, that goes, everyone needs access to healthcare. I support universal healthcare. That's another differentiation between, you know, me and my primary opponent. I just believe that everyone should have access to healthcare, including mental health care. We are the richest country in the world, and people are having GoFundMe pages to pay for healthcare. You know, again, you talk to young people after they age off their parents' health insurance, if their parents even have health insurance, they go without health insurance. I believe this is a compassion thing. It's what makes us strong as a company, or as not a company, as a country. It makes us strong as a country to make sure that our people are taken care of, you know, and we need to prioritize, especially the people of Wisconsin.
What will it take to win against Eric Van Orden in November for you or your opponent?
Yeah, I think it's the people. So like I said, I am running a grassroots campaign. For the last 18 months, I've been out there. I had a goal. I still have a goal of shaking every hand, talking to every person, all 750,000 of them in the 3rd Congressional District, which I know is a lofty goal, but I think it shows you where my values are. Like, I have been showing up and people are responding. You know, in Lafarge, I had 100 people show up at the town hall. In Viroqua, I had 120 people show up at the VFW for a town hall. You know, and up in Pigeon and Trumplow, I had a packed house. And these are small rural communities. In Galesville, I had a packed house at the library. Like, people, I have the people. I have over 600 people who have signed up to volunteer for with our campaign. And so money is a part of politics. Unfortunately, that's just the way our federal government, that's the way the values have been, which is unfortunate. And I will work to get, you know, that out of our government. So there's money, and whoever wins the primary, the money will be there. But only one of us has the people, like has all this volunteer people power. And that's our campaign. And that's what we need to win in November. You know, people so often take the people for granted. You know, outsiders, DC insiders, they take the people for granted. You know, the DC establishment, the Democratic establishment did not want me to run. They told me they didn't want a primary, that they had their candidate. And that's when I knew I had to run. You asked me my why. That's what sealed it for me. When they said, no, we don't want you to run, I said, well, then I'm running. Because the people of the 3rd Congressional District deserve a choice. They get to choose what Democrat goes up against Derek Van Orden. And insiders in D.C. do not get to choose that, even though they want to. You know, so again, and because of that, that's where my values lie anyways, is the people, like the people, very people-focused campaign. But because the establishment has funneled, you know, millions to my primary opponent and these national endorsements, that made it us all the more important to build this people power, to show them, you know, because that's what, like, well, we'll show them, you know. But that sets me apart, and that has allowed us to create this huge movement of people that are so excited for just hope and change. You know, so excited to have someone to, like, believe in. It's not even me. It's like this movement of people first, you know, and that's how we're going to win in November. The other thing, too, is, like, people want to be treated kindly, and they don't, like, that matters how you treat people. And people don't always feel like they're treated kindly with, you know, our local, with our, you know, federal elected people. So just like that respect, that integrity that our campaign has is what draws people to us. And we're like just a snowball rolling down the mountain or a bluff, you know, like, and we're just growing bigger and bigger as more people join our movement. And that's what we're going to do, you know, in November. And that's how we will, you know, flip the seat back from red to blue. Though it isn't even about colors. It's just about representing the people and local communities of Wisconsin.
That was candidate Emily Berge. This is candidate Rebecca Cook, who also appeared on our morning show. Phil Nee asked Ms. Cook why she believes she is the best candidate to oppose incumbent Republican Derek Van Orden.
What was really frustrating is, you know, Derek Van Orden has had multiple cabinet officials from this administration come in to basically carry water for him because he's not doing it himself, right? He's voted for the One Big Ugly Bill, which has hurt a lot of folks in this district. He is a lackey for Donald Trump, you know, has been supportive of these, of tariffs and the war in Iran, which, you know, I talked about how harmful that has been to our agricultural and rural communities. And so he brought, in the same week, he brought RFK Jr. up to Elk Mound, our healthcare secretary. Didn't talk about expanding those ACA tax credit premiums. Didn't talk about the hospital closures we've already seen up in Eau Claire. He talked about moving milk to the top of the food pyramid. Totally out of touch. That's what RFK, you know what I mean? Totally out of touch with what most people are struggling with right now in this district. In that same week, that was on a Monday, on Friday, Donald Trump, the president, came a mile down the road from, you know, a couple miles down the road from the farm that I grew up on. He was supposed to be there to talk about agriculture and farming and everything that he's done to support farmers. But instead, he showed everybody a picture of the reflecting pool that he was renovating, you know, in his White House ballroom renovation. And it just felt so out of touch and such a slap in the face to, I think, what is really of grave concern for a lot of folks and what their livelihood looks like. And, you know, our family had to sell our cows because of the price, low price of milk and competition with larger dairies. And when you sell a business like that, it's not just losing, you know, a business. It's a part of your tradition and heritage and way of life. And so I think, well, they're really playing partisan politics and Russian roulette with people's livelihoods. Like, we need folks that are going to be awake at the wheel, putting this country back on course.
Education, too, is a hot topic, and trying to figure out how to fund everything that's going on, too.
Well, we have, I'm a very proud product of Eau Claire Public Schools, and I think that we have a big school funding problem here in Wisconsin, and so much of that is done really at the state level, and so, but I have been making myself open and available to talking. I've been calling school board members, county board folks, city council folks all across the 3rd congressional district. You know, if I get elected, I want to work with anybody, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican, and building strong relationships with local elected officials, I think, is important. So I've been talking with a lot of those school board members, Democrats and Republicans, who are fed up with our broken school funding formula, having to have their communities go to referendum every year, every couple of years. And that's frustrating. The use of our taxpayer dollars aren't going back into our public education system. That's something I really want to advocate for. What I can control at the federal level is working to put back together a Department of Education that this administration has been dismantling. Things like more funding for early childhood education, more special education funding, and resources for mental health services in our school districts. So those are the types of things, specific funding at the federal level, that I can advocate for to come to Wisconsin. But most of our school funding is done at the state level. So, but making sure that I'm attuned to that and building relationships so that we can work towards some change here at the state level is important.
One of the things you talked about there, Rebecca, the fact that, you know, and I hear this here too, people are tired of the bickering across party lines.
Me too.
You know, why can't we all just get along, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's things that, like, you make you who you are, right? You know, or make you kind of go towards one party or another. But I really think that at the end of the day, we're all Wisconsinites. We're all Americans first. And we've got to focus on trying to find those through threads of how we come back together in a party that is, and in a country that is deeply divided and full of chaos and in forces that are trying to pit us against each other. I think that there's a lot more opportunity to actually accomplish things and get things done if we can work across the aisle. And that's something that I really intend to do if I'm fortunate to win the primary here August 11th. Please vote for me, Rebecca Cook. And then again, if I'm able to win in November, I think kind of that would be the difference between myself and someone like Derek Van Orden, who has proven to be very divisive and follows lockstep with whatever his party tells him to do.
Let's talk about your own party.
Sure.
Because, you know, there's different factions there, too. And you've got some strong support.
I do.
From some of the old guard. I saw Bernie Sanders was one. Does that help you? Do you feel, or does it hurt you, or what's your feeling?
I mean, Bernie Sanders is the most anti-establishment, you know, I guess, politician that there is out there. Like, he's not really beholden to either party. He's a progressive first. And so having the support of somebody like Senator Bernie Sanders, who has stood up to party establishment time and time again, I'm really proud of to have his support and have a progressive champion like that. I'll say I've gotten Bernie Sanders support, Senator Tammy Baldwin, who is another longtime progressive. But some of the support that I'm most proud of are the local electeds that have supported my candidacy. People like here in Richland Center, like Rachel Schultz, who's on the Richland Center City Council. She's also on my advisory council. There's a lot of people, as I mentioned, from school board to county board to city council that are backing my candidacy. This race won't be won on, you know, national endorsements. This race will be won on the support of people in this district. And that's support that I've worked to earn for a couple of years here as I've been traveling around the 3rd, hosting county tours and showing up at dairy breakfasts and putting together meet and greets. And that sort of support, I think, you know, and that sort of showing up, I think, is what's important to people right now when they have somebody as in a member of Congress like Derek Van Orden, who has failed to host any sort of in-person town hall to be accountable for his votes. I think people really recognize when you're present and around.
Those were candidates Emily Berge and Rebecca Cook, in their own words, here on the eve of tomorrow's primary.